Blog Talk Radio. This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.
Good morning and welcome to another installment of Creative Conversation. Today we are talking about Are We All Curators? A conversation with Keith Slovey. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Great. So you want to take a moment to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your trajectory of being a curator and...
So I grew up in the arts. My father is an art dealer, and we had a big collection of 20th century American pieces where we lived, and we went to a lot of museums when I was a child and growing up, and I had a great familiarity with art. In college, I minored in art history, and sort of used the standard art history curriculum as a basis for my understanding of art. And then after I graduated, I worked with my father in the gallery, which was a big gallery in Chicago, first on Michigan Avenue and then on River North. And we put on several exhibitions a month. Every month, I was involved in all the decision-making for how to select the pieces that we're going to be in and how to hang them. But the criteria there was largely commercial. We were trying to sell the pieces. That was the beginning of my practice in terms of curating and understanding how pieces went up and how people perceived them. A number of years after that, I joined the board of the Evanston Art Center and was on the exhibition committee, first as a member and then as a co-chair. And that's when my curatorial practice started to evolve away from the commercial side and more towards a curatorial practice that had a more overt messaging behind it. We were trying to show emerging artists in the Chicago area and expose the audiences that the Evanston Art Center had to those artists. Then as I became co-chair, I had another major shift in my practice, which was influenced very much by the Art Institute of Chicago. There is a new curator there, Heinrich Folkarts, who was brought in. And for the first year or so that Heinrich was presenting exhibitions, I couldn't understand what the underlying aesthetic was. And I was trying to apply this art historical paradigm that I had learned as a student. And I just couldn't see any similarity. I couldn't find the touch point. And then I had a little bit of an epiphany where I realized he had coming at it from a completely different point of view, which was that the art that he was showing was telling a story of the person who made it, not trying to create this unbroken ribbon of the art historical narrative that I had learned. And so that really liberated me in terms of the way that I viewed things and changed the dynamic of the committee. I was very fortunate that my co-chair, Elena Gonzalez, is a scholar and curator as well, who's really focused on the role of social justice in curatorial practice. And so she has also been instrumental in helping me. So that's a little bit about my journey.
And you kept finding that journey in, like, the last 60 years of your life. you kept, you know, put that really well together. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Evanston Arts Center and, you know, the mission of the Evanston Arts Center as a non-profit, and is dedicated to fostering the appreciation and expression of the arts among diverse audiences by offering extensive and innovative instruction in broad areas of artistic endeavor through classes, exhibition, interactive art activities, and community outreach. And so that is kind of like what you were describing in terms of your own narrative and how, you know, you didn't talk about your time now on the Board of Trustees, and I think that through the curatorial committee, you looked at that mission and evolved within yourself. You joined the Board of Trustees?
Right. Recently, the Evanston Arts Center, particularly the board who was involved in it, had reevaluated our mission and done a deep dive into how were we fulfilling our role in the community. And so I was immersed in that and became convinced that although we were doing a good job, we could do a better job. And as part of that, we created a curatorial fellowship specifically to bring in curators who would have a diverse point of view. And in the first instance, Alpha and is one of our fellows, we wanted someone who was unaffiliated with the institution previously so that we could have that diverse viewpoint expressed. And I'm very much looking forward to the exhibition in August.
Yeah, we are too. I'm just really actually looking forward to the year, because not only are Adira, Nott, and myself the curatorial fellows just for that exhibition, we're doing this whole year of, you know, study, you know, and influence and having these conversations around the state of our environment. And so far, you know, we've, you know, she's currently living in Amsterdam, so it's a whole nother interaction in how we're looking at this curatorial fellowship. But again, I'm really excited about this year coming, 2021. I was also looking at your strategic plan, and I guess that what you were talking about, how you kind of like looked at that and kind of shaped that to bring in, you know, it says like the vision is to be widely recognized as a dynamic art education and exhibition center that encourages freedom of artistic expression and enriches cultural life, to be the hub of artistic endeavors, a passionate advocate for the arts, and a valuable partner for arts initiatives. And so I guess that's where our initiative came in, to bring in the, you know, the curatorial fellowship. So again, I really thank and applaud the committee for doing that. So you were talking about, and I thought it was really interesting, the collection of the gallery and the gallery's focus on mid-20th century art. And I was really interested in how you and your dad acquired this Chase piece. On the website, and they were, you know, well, one piece was like an $80,000 piece, and it was done in the 1930s.
Right. So when I began my practice at the gallery as a curator, I followed along with the gallery program that had been established by my father. And as I matured into the role a little bit, I realized that there were other areas to branch out in. And so we were looking around and had done a lot of work with Frank Lloyd Wright material and turn of the century design, arts and crafts furniture, and how those pieces intersected. So the gallery had a little bit of a historical perspective. and had been in business for a long time. But what we realized is that there was a body of work that was created in the 30s and 40s during the Depression and the Second World War, when times were extremely tough and artists were struggling and collectors were very inactive. So that it created a situation that allowed a lot of very high quality works to still be available, either in artists' estates or in people's collections that were turning over. So there was a real abundance of quality material. And the other thing that was happening is the original dealers who had championed that work were all retiring and or passing away. And so there was a new group of which I was part of younger curators, dealers, who were looking at the work with a fresh perspective. And we didn't care if one of the artists had been a real pain to work with. We were just looking at the work and trying to reevaluate it. And so that was it was a really productive and exciting time as we reevaluated this whole body of work from the 30s and 40s. And that was my early career accomplishment for sure.
And I really when I visited your website of the gallery, I was really excited when I saw those pieces because I was also looking at the timeline that was happening at the Evanston Arts Center. And this little excerpt about the history, which the Arts Center was founded in October 28, 1929. And then here it is. You got this. You were brought up and nurtured amongst the great artists during that time in your collection. I won't say your dad's collection, but the collection you guys acquired. And it's like Alice C. Riley sponsored an afternoon tea at her home on Sheridan Road with the purpose of discussing how to memorialize the contributions of longtime Evanston art teacher Julia Ferguson. We're not sure what was in the tea that afternoon, but by the evening of that meeting, it was decided that the city of Evanston needed a cultural arts center, and that's how the Evanston Arts Center was created. Despite the previous week's stock market decline, the arts center went forward with its gala opening benefit held at the old Evanston Public Library. And I thought that was really interesting because the original purpose was a civic agency for the enjoyment and the study of all the arts. And so you're on your own trajectory, and even though you were not born in the 1930s, but the collection of work that is, that you all embody, and then here it is, 1920, and you all are, you're here at the Evanston Arts Center as a trustee. So I was just looking at that parallel, you know, trajectory of history, and then how it's, you know, I just thought, wow, you he is a trustee here. And you bring all that volume of information and legacy to the Evanston Arts Center. So kind of moving on in our investigation, I'm asking you the question about curatorial activities. And I want to see if you care to comment on those in terms of curatorial practice refers to methodologies and professional standards grounding these activities. In the new museumology, it is acknowledged that curatorial practice is not value neutral, but reflects power relation. Care to comment?
Well, sure. I think, first of all, since the audience can't see me, I should tell you that I'm a white male, and that's how I identify. And so, arguably, I am at the center of that power nexus. And I understand that and realize that it is a privileged position in many ways. But I think I have enough self-awareness to know that it does exist. And I obviously have the biases that I do, but I'm willing to acknowledge them and try and navigate around those so that I can be as open-minded as possible. I think all of us, whether we think about it or, well, whether we thought about it or not, you know, we know what we like, but we like what we know. And so whenever you're confronted with something that comes from a much different viewpoint, it's harder to figure it out. It's harder to know how to look at it, how to think about it. And that, I think, has been the big evolution in my practice, is about how I can change my perspective or look at it from a different point of view.
And so are we all curators? I think is the other question I want to ask you. And what does it mean to curate a collection, an exhibition? And I won't say a website, because, you know, we already talked about, you know, social media and social presence online in terms of how it relates to your curatorial work. But, you know, are we all curators? You know, because there is this whole debate now between the words of curate and curator. And they're widely used and hotly debated.
Well, I think we all curate our lives to a certain extent, whether we realize it or not. I mean, to take an example from a different sphere, it's very possible now to be in a silo of information that reinforces a viewpoint that you already have. You know, take politics, for example. You know, we've got left-leaning and right-leaning and then fringe pieces, and you can immerse yourself in one of those and be completely surrounded by like-minded viewpoints if you so choose. But I think the real challenge is, to go back to what you're saying, is to be a curator and to bring in that diversity of expression or ideas that you are actively seeking out those situations where you do not have as much familiarity, and you're trying to understand what it is that's going on and why there are people who are expressing that. So it's, you know, I think that you can be more or less explicit about it. Clearly, when we sit down at the exhibition committee and we are looking at artists' work, we're curating, for sure. But I think we all sort of curate things in our lives, you know, our personal possessions, the music that we listen to, the entertainment that we consume, venues that we go to, even activities that we do, whether it's, you know, outdoor exercising or you know, indoor socialization. We're constantly making choices about what we value, and that, for me, is the essence of curating.
And so I kind of want to move, and that's a great answer, and thank you, because I think sometimes we get lost in, you know, in the weeds of things, and how, you know, again, socially, sometimes we are called upon to respond to the current state of the environment in our practice. And sometimes maybe it's not a good fit, you know, for the exhibitions or the whatever we're creating and the spaces that we're creating in. So my other question, and something that I'm really interested in hearing from you, is that your most recent curatorial museum exhibit was at the Rockford Art Museum?
Yes, it was a number of years ago. I'd have to look it back and see. But I was still at the gallery and in contact with the director of the Rockford Art Museum. And they were very interested in looking at abstract artists artists in Chicago who were working in an abstract mode, some of whom showed at the gallery and most of whom were at other galleries or unaffiliated. Because of my position at the time and the age that I was and the age of the artist, we all kind of meshed, and I was able to draw upon the resources that I had personally and then network through the artists that I knew to find other artists. And so we put together a fairly extensive survey of artists who were working in abstract mode in Chicago. And we presented it at the Rockford Art Museum. But it was a beautiful space, and they did a great job. Most of the artists came. This is obviously pre-COVID, so we all went out to dinner and had a great lively discussion about what it was to be an artist and what did dealers think. And I missed it. It was a great time. So thanks for asking about that.
And I'm asking about that because now that, you know, you talked about pre-COVID and the relationship building with the community and the artists, you know, how do you see this, you know, the platforms that we're now having to use in, within a curatorial practice in having these art talks and these discussions? What are new ways of presenting in this curatorial land?
Yeah. Sure. I'll give you one example that I think was really informative for me was that the first post-COVID exhibition that we did at the Evanston Art Center had a number of artists who were in it. It was a group show. And in lieu of an exhibition opening, we did an online event. And I was really struck by how much more in-depth the process or the information was that I got out of the opening. I've been to 1,000 openings at least, and talked to many more artists than that. And one-on-one, in a quieter, less social environment, you can delve into some of the underlying concerns of the artist and, you know, what they're trying to present. But in a more social scene, like an opening, that's much more difficult. But at this first opening that we did at the Art Center, Evanston Art Center, they were on Zoom, and they got to talk in depth about their work. And I really got more out of that 45 minutes than I would have out of 20 in-person opening attendances. So there are some advantages. And I think that what we'll be doing is, as we move forward, there'll be some hybridization of what we were forced to do under COVID with all this distance and, you know, online presence. That's not going away. But humans are definitely social creatures, and we will, at least I am, very much looking forward to the time when we can have that more personal interaction, and I think most other people are as well. So, but yeah, I think some combination will come out of this, and we'll look back at this as a real inflection point.
I just think that I was part of that discussion as well, and there was like 80 people that were online listening to soul work. I was part of that discussion. I had a few pieces in that show, an exhibit, and I was really surprised at the number of people that wanted to listen to what the artists were talking about and how they, you know, they gave us an hour, and there was not like a lot of question and answer because it was a Q&A. And there was this, I just felt that there was not that kind of engagement where someone would raise their hand and we were all kind of getting used to the platform itself, you know, and talking to each other through that platform. And it was really interesting that we did the whole hour and listening to each artist. And I know here at the gallery that represents me, each opening, the gallery owners try to have dialogue and conversation and while people are standing around. And sometimes it's really awkward because the crowd really wants to get into the music. They want to get into the scene. They want to do the libations. You know, they want to be part of the bigger party, you know. And I think that, you know, that's when a lot of sales are made during the hype of the party and the event. But we're finding also, and I know that you're looking more at the Evanston Arts Center is not a place for commercial, but there is part of the charge of getting the work sold. And people come through. You have a large collection base or collector base there at the center?
Right there. Almost every piece that we show is for sale, and can be purchased through the Evanston Art Center. And the Art Center does take a percentage of the sales to help support its activities. I know for a fact that the curatorial practice, the exhibitions that we put on, are not done to generate significant revenues for the Evanston Art Center, with the exception of two of our big shows, which are, we have a holiday exhibition that's coming up starting next month. And there we bring in a variety of arts and crafts to sell. And very much that excitement of being there with other people and getting their reaction to what do they like, and having that kind of interaction is really valuable. But as you say, when it's a big event like that, people are distracted and they want to socialize with each other, and it's harder to get their attention. So I go back to this. I think there's going to be some kind of hybridization of the online components that we've gotten, like Zoom or this blog, and that in-person interaction. It'll be interesting to see.
And coming up, there's the Evanston 2021 Evanston Vicinity Biennale.
Right. So we do that every 2 years. And that is curated by people who are not in the Evanston Art Center in one way or another. Well, that's not the right way to say it. They're not on the exhibition committee, and they're not on the board of trustees. So they might have some affiliation, but they're essentially independent curators who come from a variety of backgrounds, whether it's academic or practice or museum. Curators, we try and have three so that they're balanced out, and but not so dispersed that the group gets unwieldy. And that has been a showcase for, I don't know, like 50 years for artists from the Chicago and Evanston vicinity to show their work in a really competitive way. And Alpha,
and
I believe you're one of the curators in this next round, is that right?
Yeah, and it was like 200 entries, and I must say that, you know, during the 200 entries was very challenging because of the work itself. You know, all of the artists, you know, put forward dynamic work. You had, you know, emerging. You had a huge cross-section of artists that were in the exhibit. Our other jurors were Dan Devining and also Kate Palazzi, and she's a director of Corbett and versus Dempsey. We have just a few minutes left, and if you want to make any other comments about, your practice?
So it's how to sum up everything. I think that what I would say is that having the wherewithal to look outside yourself and realize that you have a particular point of view that's valid, but that there are other viewpoints that exist that are equally valid. And to try and accommodate and understand them has been the biggest challenge for me in my practice.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to contribute.
Brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.